Welcome, guys, on a morning session. How do you feel today? Good? Yay! How was the party yesterday? Woo! Woo! Okay, so a couple of words about why I'm talking to you in the morning and what the session is going to be about. Couple of words of introduction, basically speaking. My name is Paula, and as you see, I got a pretty complex surname. That surname comes from Poland. I'm from Poland. And what I'm doing for a living, it's security. So security always as a passion, security as a job, because I'm a penetration tester. So even I can imagine that I don't like an evil person, but I'm kind of on the evil side. Because my job, everyday job, is to get into the infrastructures. And I do also work for a company that is called Secure. It's a company that has two entities. We just opened an office in New York. So we are really proud of that. And the company is basically doing penetration tests. So you see, I'm kind of a boring person. I always tend to say it because I don't have any kind of hobby besides my work. Kind of sad, isn't it? After hours, I sleep. And when there is a time to do something, it's always about security. Also, security is my husband. I don't like to mention him. It's not that because he's like a cute or something like that. I don't really care about that. My romanticism is like that. But he's also a penetration tester. So at least we've got something to talk about. Isn't it like that? Okay, couple of words about the session. Where the concept comes from? Well, first of all, as you see, who knows? Maybe let me ask the question. Who knows what the CSI is? Raise your hands. Come on, we're in the US. I'm gonna ask this question again, okay? Just wake up, guys. Who knows what the CSI is? Raise your hands. Yay, that's like almost everybody. Yes, thank you for that. So it's a cyber scene investigation. And the CSI concept, probably you watch the series, do you? Yeah, of course you do. I can promise you one thing within the session, that we're gonna, of course, investigate the cybercrime scene, but there will be no commercials, if you're fine with that. And couple of words also. You know that I'm from Poland, and do you know what Poland is characteristic for? What it's known for? Vodka. Well, I cannot give you that. I'm sorry. At least not sausage. Okay. So just a tiny thing. I brought three pieces of sausage, and I'm giving the first piece of sausage to the person that is sitting in front, okay? Just to tell you that tomorrow when you're gonna come to the memory session, sit in front, okay? So that's for you. Thank you. You can share with everybody else, you know? Okay, so cyber investigation for Windows. Let's have a look. First of all, whenever we are thinking about that kind of investigation, there is, of course, a couple of things we should discuss. Within the companies, and this is what inspired me to prepare this session, I've been playing with an interesting project, and this is the project within which the administrator was actually, as it appeared at the end, making an internal sabotage. And this was a pretty interesting factory because this was one of the most important industries, like a very, very known industry. And what was he doing? He was periodically doing these tiny, tiny things to put the business down. I mean, I'm serious. The company lost a couple of millions of dollars just because he was playing games. And we were brought to the field, and there was, of course, this question, Paula, could you help us, and so on. Okay, great, let's have a look. I'm like, okay, so guys, could you please share with me all the dumps that you made, like a disk dumps and the memory dumps that you made of the machines that were attacked by this guy? And they were like, no, we just reinstalled the servers because we had to keep going. So can you imagine? People are losing a lot of money, but they don't care, on the other hand, about something that is called an incident response procedures. This is something that is just not in place. If someone's going to be under attack, and your business is gonna be broken, or let's say one server is gonna be broken, the question is, what are we gonna do? Call the police? Great, but couple of things that are in the memory or are stored as a hash, they're gonna be only for a couple of seconds, and only for a couple of minutes. That depends, of course, on the settings. So it would be really nice to, A, establish a proactive monitoring, B, know what to do. Sometimes we are like, we don't want to put it legal, we don't want to open the legal case, we don't want to call the police, it's just something major, minor, and if it's something major, then we're going to play with the legal aspect. So, generally speaking, incident response, it's something that is a very serious thing, because at that stressful moment, when you don't gather all the proof in a good way, then probably trace is going to be gone. And then you will never be able to trace back to the person that attacked you. Okay, so a couple of more things. Whenever we are thinking about the tools, I'm always sharing the tools on my session. As you know, if you've been on my session, you know that it's always very practical. So, enter the website, there is a tools link. You don't have to read it, there is like tiles, there's a tool tile, you just click on that, and then you can download all the tools that we'll be playing with instead of one that I will show at the end because it's kind of purely evil. So unfortunately I cannot share it, but a lot of scripts that I'll be running today, you can of course launch them and they are safe. So go over there, just a tiny, tiny thing. Do not, please do not, under any conditions, do not run the software with the raccoon icon. Okay? And I'm serious about it, because it's going to break your system. So if you want to run it only in the virtualized environment. That is not a production environment. Okay, so that's just if it's about the tiny, tiny introduction. Okay, guys, so agenda. I usually keep it very simple, bringing the long story to the end. We're going to talk about the fundamental research at the beginning, then we're going to do the live analysis of the situation, and then we're going to discuss the system mechanism that we can cheat on as a hacker and that we can search and dig into as a researcher. First of all, of course, what we mentioned is to preserve the evidence. If at some point you are under attack, something happened to your server, the question is what kind of steps you need to take. And there are two approaches that we've got. One approach is to bring machine down, disconnect it, of course, from the network, and keep it till the law enforcement comes or whoever that's going to investigate the situation. The step number two that I'm actually a big fan of is to make a memory dump first. Because whenever there is something that you've got running on a certain machine, of course there will be traced back to the disk, but sometimes, and that's what I will show you today, you've got, for example, a malware or any particular tools that can be running only within the memory. So they're extracting within the memory. And disk will not tell you anything. There's going to be a tiny file, but it's going to be, for example, encrypted. And if you do not have an access to the memory, you will never be able to grab it. So whenever you are doing that kind of steps after the incident response, within the incident response, it's pretty important to do the disk dump and pretty important to do the memory dump. At least to, of course, keep any traces. It's also pretty important to keep your job as clean as possible. And why I'm talking about it? Because sometimes it happens that if you want to virtualize a certain machine, you run certain tools, whatever you've got running on your box can react to it. And I do have today a piece of malware that is actually reacting to a tiny change. And if you do that particular, use that particular tool, you make this particular change, the certain malware is going to explode. So it is pretty important to, of course, take appropriate steps, make a disk dump. There are tools available, like, for example, Disk2VHD by Marko Sinovich, WinDD. You've got Nkase, so it's very easy. To make a memory dump, we're going to talk about tomorrow, in tomorrow's session. There is a very nice tool that is written by Mathieu Suisse. It's called Dump It. And it's just like, I mean, it could not be easier. You just open it up, press dump it, and then yes, and then the dump is made. And then you've got everything that was working. There are two sentences that are guiding me through my whole life. And I mean, if I probably mention them, you're going to be, oh my God, her life is so miserable. First sentence is whatever runs is in the memory. So this is like a super important sentence because things may not trace back to the disk. whatever runs into memory. And the second thing is that, and this is very forensic sentence, it's the operating system at the very, very end is just a dump, is just a bunch of files. If you put it down, you have it offline, it's just a bunch of files. And these files, when you put them online, they start to cooperate with each other. So having this in mind, we can jump in into investigation and find out, of course, what is going on, because, and this is a kind of Polish approach, forgive me for bringing Poland, but Poles are a very special nation, you know, I'm pretty sure you noticed that in US. A, they like to break things, just like that, naturally, it's just like in my blood, it's just like you touch something and you break it, and it's like you want it, your internship want it. And the second thing that is related to Poles is that they like to dig in. So if there is something, my grandfather is like that a little bit, yes? Whenever he sees something, he wants to like put it in pieces. Like, and if he paid for it, it's like, it's his. And if you paid for your operating system, it's yours. It means you paid for it. Nothing that you don't know about cannot be running in this piece of code over there. So as long as you keep that in mind, we can, of course, get to analysis. And at the very beginning, tiny things. Whenever you got under attack and you already preserved your evidence, you made the dumps, and then you can work on a certain machine and you can do analysis on your own, of course, if you want to take it like that. Sometimes it's nice to just to put it as a legal case. Then it's nice to check out for a couple of things. First of all, check out what kind of accounts are running within the operating system. Is there any kind of account created left? I know this is very simple and obvious, I know, but it's nice to check out, of course, if there is something left. And I'm going to run one tool. It's called OS Forensics. That tool is like that. And again, I'm very bad at marketing, so don't get me wrong. I just find this tool as a good tool. It's not a free tool, but it's also not a very expensive tool. I don't want to be mistaken, but right now it's, I think, around $300 to $400. And what you can do, there's this system information part, and you can, for example, scan a certain drive. So I got, for example, drive X, and get the information about the user's profile from the drive. So it's an offline drive that I've got, go. And then it takes a moment, it analyzes it. Here, I got this get user info. I can just click in, and then I can find out that there is a user number 2, user 1. There is also a guest account, as you see, and there's also an administrator with the seat 500, as you see. Login count 80 times, it's a pretty active account. So this is what you can see. It's not a profile, by the way, it's an account that you've got. To list the profiles, we're going to, of course, jump into other demos. Just a tiny thing, where all this information is stored. You see it's in the SAM registry hive. So what you need to do, you can also do not use this tool, but for example, take the SAM from the disk, and you can do it when the disk is offline, and then analyze if you do have any kind of accounts created. But of course, I totally agree with you. You're probably thinking, why hacker supposed to create any kind of account? Of course he's gonna delete the traces. Well, I wouldn't be so sure, but let's say yes. So within such case, what we can do, we can, for example, check out any kind of network activity if you've got and what we've got running within the certain boxes. So let me show you a tiny case, tiny examples, what kind of information we're able to grab from the certain operating system. First of all, of course, one of the things, so the connections, to list the connections, it's a netstat ANO. And with that, let me bring the machine back again. Okay, here we go. Netstat ANO. It allows us to list all the connections that are established using the process ID. And actually, I mean, it's like, oh, this is so simple. Mm-mm. Disagreed. This process ID is actually very, very useful because some of the components of malware or any kind of running mechanism, if there is something that was running on this box, it's hiding. Well, hiding. As long as you paid for this operating system, nothing can be hidden. But sometimes it's like a little bit cheating on us. And that process ID can help us out to find the related traffic. Okay. Another thing that we've got within our list is the resolver cache. And actually, it's kind of simple. And it's, of course, all about ipconfig. Oh, sorry. Here we go. Ipconfig, display, DNS, allows us to display the history that someone entered. As you see, my machine is pretty clear. But for example, if I do the same story within my box over here, ipconfig, I will just run it here, display, DNS, bank. Here, you've got, for example, I was on the OS Forensics website. I was also entering Facebook and so on. Of course, that's going to be alive in that DNS cache, so it's called resolver cache, for amount of seconds or minutes or hours or days that is configured within the zone that you are asking. So it might be 10 seconds, might be, but it might be also a day. Sometimes this is enough when somebody was entering. And this is not per user. This is global, per operating system. So just a tiny, of course, case here. Two simple demos at the very, very beginning. Okay, of course, ARP cache is enough to play ARP minus A. As we know, I don't want to show it because it's too easy. But just a tiny comment within the ARP. ARP lasts for a very, very short time. So if there is nothing running on your box that is communicating over the network, ARP will last up to 2 minutes. And then if it's not renewed, it's going to last up to 10 minutes. So it's not much. You don't really have much time. Of course, that makes this trace to be useless, but only if hacker did not left anything behind. Okay, guys. So having this in mind, another story. Let's go deeper, yes, because this is something that definitely is worth having a look. Whenever we are analyzing operating system, there is a bunch of mechanisms that are gathering data whenever things are running within the certain box. Very often, we do have a data stored per user's profile. So if hacker deletes his profile, it's not really much that we can grab instead of something that is called prefetch. Prefetch, it's a history of what kind of executables were running on a certain operating system. And within our small analysis, I would like to show you how to grab things from prefetch. So this is the first thing, which means what kind of executables were running totally within the operating system. Still, we've got the user's profile related information. And here comes the question, what is in NTUser? And it's a question for a sausage. Just to like encourage you a little bit. Or maybe you just wouldn't want it. I mean, you don't know what you are saying. It's just good. The profile? Correct. But there are settings for the profile, but it's not complete. What is NTUser? Registry, you said. Exactly. It's for you coming. Can I catch it? Yay, sorry. And again, share it, okay? So, NTUser, it's a registry, exactly. So whenever you've got a current user logging on, NTUser, it's a user settings, user's registry. So what kind of stuff can we find over there? For example, MRU, so most recently used. Whenever you open up the application, you can find out over there the certain data is like, this is the recently used document. You can find that kind of information over there. Some applications, they keep tracking for themselves. MRU, it's the most recently used executables, applications that we've got. And a couple of other things as well. But the recent documents, it's a settings that is managed purely by explorer.exe. For example, we can grab the history from Word, as this is obvious, from Paint, from Internet Explorer, that's another setting. So there's a history preserved within the operating system. A couple of other things that are also interesting is that you can keep tracking of what people were entering in the run window. I mean, you can put from drop-down list all the settings. Where to list it? Of course, everything is in the registry. And so on and so on. Let me show you a couple of things that are and how we are able to grab the history from the certain elements in operating system. So first of all, I'm going to launch my machine, which is over here. And let me do the full screen. It's going to be a little bit more comfortable. And over here, I got a tiny script. So, I mean, maybe it's not the tiny, but it's more or less tiny. That is called CSI Basics. You're going to find it in the tools folder on my website. You don't have to make notes. Yes, just focus and enjoy what we can do, and then you can practice at home. So, first of all, what we can list is that what kind of profiles we've got on the disk. So let me run the selection. And of course, at the end, we do have an information that there are such profiles running. So we do have two administrators. We've got Freddy Krueger and public. This guy over here is a good guy. Don't get me wrong. It's just, it's just a very uncomfortable name and surname. Anyway, so first of all, what we can also do regarding the user's profile is to list them from the registry. Profile information, who is this? It is in the registry Hive. So as you see, we've got Windows NT, current version, profile list. And then let's check out. It's just a tiny warming up exercise. So here we do have a certain profiles that we've got. We've got a certain SIDs, security identifiers for the users, and we can list them up. If the hacker deleted his profile, you cannot be actually sure what kind of things he were doing, but there is one tiny thing that I've mentioned that is global and operating system independent. Let's have a look. This is basically nothing but a prefetch. So let me run what we've got within the prefetch. Where the history is actually saved. So first of all, what we need to have a look at, and this is something that is very important for your systems, is that prefetch by default is turned off, it's disabled within the SSD drives. So if you do have an SSD drive, you need to turn it on. And there's this kind of cheap tips and tricks that you can find out in the internet, like, oh, if you want to save the disk space, like this, whatever, 3 megabytes, if you want to save it, delete the prefetch. Yay! Tips and tricks. It could be cheap tricks and cheap, yeah, whatever. Okay. Okay, so number 3 means it's turned on. Yes, there is a registry Hive, session manager, memory management, prefetch parameters. You enable prefetch, and then you specify it to number 3. Then it's going to monitor what is going on within the booting process and within the startup. Awesome. But turn it on. We do have such a cool drives right now. I do have SSDs as well, but I turn it on. You also turn it on if you want to trace what is going on inside your file system. Okay, so question is, do we have any files? So get child item, and then we are listing the prefetch folder. By the way, you may already noticed that what I'm using for this tiny forensic right now, it's purely PowerShell. This is actually awesome. All the tools, forensic tools, they're not for free. And it's not because I'm poor, like I'm using PowerShell because I don't want to pay for software. No. It's not this. It is because PowerShell is cool. Of course, when it's needed, I'm going to use a certain software because we still need some software. And then I'm going to mention, of course, all the names. There's a lot of tools that we've got today. Okay, guys, so run selection. And here you do have a lot of executables. So these files over here, these are saying what was actually running within the certain box. And as you can spot, I do have here running Mimikatz. And to be sincere, I'm going to talk about it more within the memory session, but Mimikatz, it's a tool that is written by Benjamin Dolpe that our team is actually contributing a little bit. So I'm always really proud to tell you about that tool because we do have our 3 cents in it. And apparently somebody was running that tool. Kind of interesting, and we don't have any kind of different profile, like a profile that is indicating something. We know Freddy, we know who's Freddy, for example. So, can we, for example, analyze what was running, what kind of modules were loaded within the Mimikatz? And I hear, I get a small for each, that within the file that we've got, so the prefetch file, we're going to list everything that is the Mimikatz related. And one tiny thing, I'm going to use PF64 tool. This is a tool that you can get from the TZWorks website. And to be sincere, and again, that tool, it's not for free. It's still not expensive. As far as I know right now, it's below $100. But it's an amazing tool that can analyze your prefetch and can even say what time this tool was running. So you can actually make a timeline within the attack. Let's have a look. Within here, I'm going to run the selection. It's going to analyze the tool, of course, what kind of modules were loaded, so files mapped, how many times the tools were running, run one times, and when, modified access created, and so on. So everything, everything. Of course, we can say, what if hacker deletes prefetch? If somebody's local admin, yes, you can work with prefetch. But that tiny thing may be still left. If it's not, then we need to move further. So let's do it. Okay, let me close it. And what I will play with. First of all, there is one tiny thing that we can check for. I'm going to check right now. And again, registry. Everything is within the registry. The history of the terminal server client that I was connecting to a certain RDP servers. So I'm going to run the selection, and as you see, my account that I'm logged on right now has no history. But what about everybody else? Maybe there was some hopping going on. Maybe hacker used somebody's account. I mean, we've got a trace of Mimikatz. Mimikatz is used to dump the clear text password from the memory. And if someone is logged on, and there's a Mimikatz running, you're going to get the password of that person immediately. So probably, hacker used Mimikatz to grab somebody's password. Whose password? Let's see. Okay, so terminal services, and let's have a look. I'm going to run the tiny script over here. Here we go. And run the selection. And that's becoming a little bit more clear. You can list, if a hacker used someone's account, this is related, you can see clearly that this person was connecting using the Freddy's account, or maybe it was Freddy, to some server. We know, of course, the background. Freddy is a person. He's a live person. And we can also ask Freddy, hey, Freddy, have you ever logged on to the server? And it's going to be, no, never. I mean, why should I? Maybe he did. Maybe he did not. Or to this machine. So that kind of investigation that is verbal is also necessary. And within this administrator, with the sabotage that I've mentioned at the very beginning, it was actually all about the discussions. He was spying on people. It was scary. He was spying on people and watching what they were doing on their desktops. Within Daimler, you can connect to the certain machines without announcing yourself. And that's what he was doing. So we found the trace that he was actually the person doing that. There's a lot of stuff regarding the research, but all these tiny components, when you put them together, they create a whole picture. And it's just an operating system. So here we see, of course, that information. Okay, now I've got a small question to you. Because I do have a tool. This tool is, of course, also shared. It's a tool written as a, instead of roses, my husband does not bring me flowers. Well, sometimes he does, but I prefer tools. And he's like, this is the tool, my love. I'm like, oh, so romantic. Okay, so let's have a look. So here, I will open up the cache of the RDP. And where is this? Well, this is the path. It is within the user's profile. Remember, there was someone connecting, or Freddy's was connecting, to the server. We listed it from the history. So the question is, and this is kind of cool. Sometimes when you are on a vacation, you are like MSTSC connecting to from Hawaii to the whatever home server, using RDP connection, not using the internet cafe in some creepy place for security reasons. There is one tiny switch that you should never forget about. It's called MSTSC/public. Write it down. And the reason why I'm asking for it is because if you don't do it, it leaves the bitmaps behind you. What you saw, if you are browsing your account, you are checking for money, how much money I'm getting for a vacation, no problem, everybody else will see it as well. So, we've got a cache over here. I'm going to open it up. That tiny tool, well, you still need to learn how to use it, but just a tiny case. I'm going to first decode the certain bitmaps. Maybe I would just do it differently. Let me do it like that. 64, and then I'm going to start from the 3M, and then decode 3 megabytes of the file. File is, as you see, 9 megabytes. Very good. Good. So here comes the question for the last sausage. what kind of stuff the hacker saw. Who said that? Hey, I'll try, okay? But if somebody gets hit, please don't sue me, okay? So here we go. Whoa, that was, yeah, my sport only limits to this. Like, really? Okay, of course, it's an IIS. So let's have a look, because this is pretty interesting. So someone connected to the server, someone opened up the IIS console. So let's go to the server and have a look. Maybe there is something, some other trace that we can find. And this is where things are getting interesting. And we are getting right now to a live analysis of a certain piece of malware, because hacker, he left a trace. And that particular trace, it's going to be to analyze. But remember at the beginning, I told you that there's going to be no commercials. Remember? I lied. There's one commercial coming, because it's a CSI. So, the tiny commercial as an interrupt before we jump to the investigation case, it's the, ladies and gentlemen, USB glue. I've been receiving so many questions about how to secure our USB ports from people plugging in the USB sticks. Use that. Thank you. It's a real website, by the way. I don't know, I mean, on what kind of stuff you can make business. Okay. Okay, analyzing malware. First of all, we need to verify what malware is about. Where is it? What kind of launching mechanism it has? Let's use any kind of traces that we can have. Any kind of traces. Network monitor, perfect. Malware usually communicates within the network. It usually does. Malware is usually written within the native code. It usually is, which makes it a little bit harder to analyze. Our piece of malware is a mixture of .NET code and the native code. You're going to see that. First, we need to find it, of course. And whenever you would like to analyze it, here on the slide, you've got mentioned tools. Make sure you download the presentation later. I got the message from the media guys that this presentation is going to be available within 24 hours from now. So tomorrow, download the slides, read the tools. All the tools that are mentioned here are crucial within the any kind of tracing, any kind of analysis. Let's dig in. So, first of all, what I'm going to do, and this is a CSI scenario number one, something is going on. So what kind of stuff is going on over here? Let's have a look. I'm going to go to the server right now, because as you remember, there was a hacker connecting to the server. And let's have a look. So view, full screen mode. First of all, I'm going to run the network monitor. The reason why I'm going to run network monitor is to find out if there is something that is communicating over the wire. So we'll start. And let's see what kind of traffic we've got. Network monitor, it's a free tool, of course, you can download it from the internet and so on. And there is this communication going on. Very good. Aha, we already got it. So, tiny thing, you see these two messages over here? I'm going to enlarge it. So there is this two messages going on. Who is causing the problem? System. Why am I looking at these two messages? Because they happen, you see, 38. It's 38. And then I'm going to go down and find out the same type of communication. It's 43. Okay. No, it's not this one, sorry. It's father. 48. So 10 seconds later, let's find the TLS. 58. 10 seconds later. So there's something periodic going on. It would be nice to trace it back to a process. But it says system. Yay. It's system. It's Microsoft Windows. Of course not. Okay. So what are we going to do? Let's stop the trace. And let's basically check out, because there was an IIS window that was open. Is there anything weird in our IIS so that it's like communicating? Like, because as we judge the communication, there is it. Where is it? Here we go. There's this TLS. There is actually a client communicating with the server, and we got the response back. So it is HTTP GET, HTTPS, actually, and then we get the response back. And over here, we can see our IIS. We can just, like, browse through these websites and verify, like, is there anything, like, creepy? Of course, we can jump in, content view, just nothing special, really nothing special. Of course, we can browse a certain website, verify what's that about. So we do have here the browse button. We've got some websites running, whatever the content is. I mean, don't pay attention to this tiny, cute doggy. HTTPS, because it is the communication that we've got. And of course, we do have some no content over here. So this is kind of strange, what is going on over here. This is kind of strange. So what we can find out, so let me see, is that who causes that certain type of traffic. And our IIS server that we've got, our IIS server, it's running. So we do have a website that is responding and so on. Of course, what we can do over here is to stop it and then verify if the communication still persists. So I will just stop it, okay. And then what I will do, I'm gonna open up the new trace, so the network monitor, new capture, and let's start it one more time. So start, and let's see if the communication is still running. In the meantime, of course, I can show you that if I will try to, because my web server is already stopped, if I would like to browse the website, then of course, I will not be able to get any kind of content because it's not running. Very good. So let's have a look at the trace. But as you see, we still do have that communication going on. So what's that about? And here comes the story. Whenever we do have anything running over HTTP, HTTPS, of course, normally there is World Wide Web Publishing Service and Windows Process Activation Service that is responsible for that, but not this time. Who is responsible for that? And as you see, there is system. Is that probably some operating system component? What's that? HTTP.sys. This is the guy that does the communication. HTTP.sys. So how to map the communication that is done by the driver to a process? That is kind of hard. Let me stop the trace and let me show you. First of all, what I will do, I'm gonna run the old one and my favorite, NetSH. Yes? Within the NetSH, of course, we can configure IP address if you are geeky enough, or if you wanna struggle a little bit, it's nice to struggle sometimes. Here, you can find out, of course, how to do it. I'm gonna go to the HTTP context, and then, question mark, there is also a show context. I will enlarge it to you guys back in a second. So show context gives us the following context, as you see over here. One of the things is the NetSH HTTP service state. So I'm going to run service state, show, of course, first, show, service state. And over here, and this is actually really cool, we do have an information. It's a really short answer that we've got. When the IIS is down, we do have a very short answer. What kind of stuff is going in the network? And there are two things going on in the network. This one and this one. This is, of course, the management, 5985 or 86 for secure connection. It is the remote management service. And the pricing, I mean, we don't have an application that is called pricing. Can we just like enter it and check out what is going on? Of course we can. So we can go over here and then run it on the 10.10.10 HTTPS, of course, 10, which is our local address, pricing. And here, we should have some information. So there is some website running on our server without IIS running. Why? Because that's how HTTPS works. It's nice to know that. So let's have a look what kind of investigation we can make over here. What is nice within the HTTP .sys is that, of course, we're going to have the process IDs revealed. And these process IDs are very nice to have a look at because 212, 2676 are probably the process that are communicating over the network. We can sort out by process ID. I'm going to open here the Process Hacker. You can also do the same stuff with the Process Explorer. Mario's going to talk about Process Explorer a lot, so let's have something opposite. And first of all, what we're going to go to, it's the 212. If you put your cursor here, in the very bottom, you've got WinRM. So this is this port that we saw. Yes, 5985. So it's not really our malware. But another process that we've got, it's a 2676 that is communicating over the network. 2676. 76. Ah, Run DLL, 32. This is actually kind of nice, because whenever you see Run DLL, it's like, whatever. It's an operating system process, isn't it? Never think like that. It is an operating system executable, true, but what it runs is DLLs. What kind of DLLs? Whatever DLLs. So what we can do, we can go to the properties of it and find out how particularly this particular run DLL is launching the other DLLs. And within the general tab, you see here that we do have some method, which is called runcc, that is called for within some DLL. And that's where you need your coffee. Because the question is, and have you ever wondered, what this DLL does and how to check for it? So let me actually show you. It's going to be a small trace. And a couple of things. First of all, what we can do within this run DLL process, what we can do, so let me go to the properties. We can go to the modules, and we can search for the certain types of DLLs. Like, for example, our DLL. There's going to be probably somewhere. Let me see. I'm going to sort it out by the name, maybe. And there is this malware server running. What we can do, open file location, and then save it somewhere. So it's running in Windows. Okay, good to know. This is, by the way, the typical place when such things launch. And we're going to put our DLL here. Let me actually delete it. Within the analysis folder. So here we've got it. The second thing that, because I know how this malware works, we can just browse through the list of DLLs and display the path. So what is also launched is this tiny thing, is the TMP, something that is probably executing some code. I mean, description doesn't really leave any kind of doubts. Probably it's something cute, I don't know. And then we can open the file location and then take this and also bring it to analysis, so paste. Okay, and this is the first thing that we've done on the server. But remember, there is a client asking for the same stuff. So let's leave it for now like that. We already did that. And let's see what part of the client it's communicating with that server. So let me go in here, and let me do, that's a nice view, a small analysis. So if you are wondering what kind of process is communicating, there is a tiny thing that you can do. I'm going to run the full screen. There is a tool by Microsoft. I'm going to launch over here. It's called XPerf. XPerf, I mean, literally, we could talk about XPerf for millions of hours, because XPerf, it's the one that is actually going to the bones of operating system, and it's doing all the monitoring that you may imagine. If operating system allows for something, XPerf is going to dig in. Also, if you are a developer, ASP.NET, the ASP.NET processing can also be monitored within the XPerf. If you want to do the performance monitoring, XPerf, like XPerf, XPerf, XPerf. Okay. So, let's take it out. So this tiny command, let me go to the XPerf, the one that I've got. Forgive me, it's just a lot of typing, but let me explain it. I'm starting the monitoring of the process and thread creation, and also the parameters, the settings of how they are loading, plus I'm doing also the network trace. These tiny commands over here is just to make it a safe run. It's just to make it a good practice. Normally, you always specify the end, where things should be at the end. So whenever, for example, files get too big, it will not, because it will run in a circle. So XPerf file, they tend to run really big. Once there was a really, really big analysis that we did of like a big portal from our customers, and it's not really unusual, to be sincere. We were monitoring the ASP.NET requests, how they are processed, and if you run that particular tool for a bunch of seconds, we had over 4 GB large file containing data. Puck, just like that. So that's why it's a good practice to set it up like that. Okay, let's start it. The tool sometimes is not very user-friendly, but we need to get used to it. And then 10 seconds, because as you remember, there was this 10 seconds period. Very good. Now we're going to stop it. So let's stop it. And then, so stop the network ETL. We're going to save it into an expert folder. It takes a moment because it buffers it out. And here we go. We don't have a trace created. And now we're going to analyze that search in ETL. But first of all, we're going to run against it something that is called action. So this is this minus A dumper. We're going to dump it to the text file. Believe me, you don't want to open the ETL file in Notepad, unless you don't want to go crazy, because it's a lot of information. Of course, you can use for that something that is called Windows Performance Analyzer, WPA tool, free to be downloaded from the Microsoft webpage. Very cool. But in this case, we don't need it. Okay, so we do have this text file created. Very good. And now what we're going to do, we're going to find the string. So it's a find str, very simple tool. The one that I'm searching for, because I know that whenever we are doing the network trace with an XPerf, TCP send, it's one of the things that is inside the file. And we're going to, of course, dig in. We're going to run the TCP send minus I TCP send like this. And then searching within the file, so test txt. And then I'm going to stream it to TCP send.txt. Paste. Bunk. And now we can open the tcpsend.txt. Oh, let's see. Maybe something went not super cool. Let's see. Find string. Okay, there is nothing that we got. Oh, that's a good point. Exactly. Let me dig in. Maybe I just copied and pasted. Yeah. Like this. Mm-hmm. And then TCP. Ah, that's so much better. Good. I don't have a source set. I'm sorry. But come tomorrow. I'm going to give you one. Okay? Thanks. Okay. So we've got here, again, run DLL. And over here, there is this communication going on in between 10.10 to 10. And then we've got 10.10 to 100. And there is the process, run DLL 32. Then, of course, we can also analyze. And making the long story short, what we can do, we can also dig in into a process hacker, find the 1492 process over here, 1492 process, here we go, and again, it's run DLL, we can go to the properties and find out what kind of stuff it's loaded over here. Basically, whenever we sort it out by either description and so on, maybe we can sort it by the name, we can search for something interesting over here. Here, as you see, I get also the malware library running, malware client DLL. Cool. So maybe we can just also save it for analysis. So this is how you can document stuff. Why we are doing it? Because we want to analyze it offline. You don't want to mess up with this code. You don't know how it's going to react. So I got here a folder created, analysis. We're going to paste it over here. And let me also have a look at that module over here, because it's one of the modules that is running over here. So bunk, I'm going to copy it, and I'm also going to bring it to analysis. Okay, so here comes the thing. Paste. If you would like to analyze if this is like an executable code and so on, what you can do, there is a kind of a lot of tools, of course. One of the tools is called Resource Hacker. And Resource Hacker, it's not a process hacker, it's a resource hacker, within which you can open up either this DLL. Either, for example, you can open all the files, so TMP file, but we're going to open DLL, open, and over here, you can see what is inside that certain library. Of course, you can open it in Notepad, but it's not my point. My point is to export the executable code. So, what I'm going to do, so you've got a binary, here you've got some information, we can enlarge it a little bit, and here, you can find an information that this program cannot be run in a DOS mode. Ah, so it's some code that executes. And we've got some DLLs, like, and this is the question that again we ask, like, what is in the certain DLL and how to check it? Of course, you can dig in and you're going to be like, of course, like, oh, yeah, that's so funny. But no. Next thing we can do, we can, of course, jump into the tool that is called IllSpy. And IllSpy, that's the moment that, of course, you need to talk to a developer and consult it with a developer and verify how to, of course, understand a certain piece of code. But let me do a small analysis for IT pros. There is also another tool that you can check out. I will show you in a moment, because IlSpy is for the .NET code. And whenever you do have a native code, you need to use any other software that's going to understand it and it's going to decompile it for you. So we are digging into. First of all, whenever we are doing analysis, let me just launch all files. I'm going to do a small analysis of this TMP file. So let me open it up. And over here, we do have a small piece of code. We've got some code over here. We can, of course, have a look, like what is inside. If you are an IT pro, that's great. Probably then you will need to, as I said, talk to your developer. But couple of comments. We do have a small resource use over here. It's called a problem. If you would like to dig in into an code, of course, you can browse through all of the things that we've got over here and check out what is going on within the certain methods. So for example, the question is, of course, where do we start it from? And this is the code. You can, of course, later on, you can save it as a project, and then you can compile it back again. So this is really nice. But it's not a developer session. So, of course, the question is where we should start from. There is a tool that is called PE Bros Pro, if you are interested. But now you're gonna probably smash me and like throw some sausage back to me. Because this is nothing over here. Maybe I can just, could be this one, open. Let's see, it analyzes it for the moment. This is a tool that you can use to disassembly the native code. So if you are a fan of assembler, that's the place. It launches for a moment, so we're gonna be back. Okay, guys, it's really like that. So it launches the whole code and it analyzes it and so on. Okay, so, oh, here we go. That's good. Here, within exports, we've got a run client export. And here, within the whole code, I know, it's terrible, we've got one jump. We can, of course, right-click and click disassemble and go to the code that is a native code for that particular malware. Of course, good luck. Now it's a time not even for coffee, but two cigarettes at the same time. Okay, so over here, we do see that there's a small instance created, and this is a CLR instance, that indicates that we're going to play with a .NET code. And I think this is the moment we should stop. Because if you want to do the analysis, I'm talking about this place over here, if you're doing the analysis, then of course you will dig in harder. This is like hours of discussion, what is going on over here. So let me make a small analysis over here. We do have here a run web client method. And here, as you can see, this is the malware that is running on the client side. We are launching something that is from client.ini. And that client.ini, it's probably somewhere. Of course, we can search where the client.ini is. Within the client.ini, I can tell you, we can search, of course, the whole disk, where is the client.ini. But I can tell you that it's over there. Of course, search is not very appealing, so let's just bring it. And that client.ini connects to our server. Aha, so we have a malware that connects somewhere. Well, sorry, not a surprise. Just I will not save it, yeah? Don't save. No, don't save. Okay, so what is going on over here later? So we are running a certain method. Let's see what kind of method is that. We are loading this client.ini and we are running the certain method, bunk. Okay, here we are creating a timer and this checkcc method we are calling for whenever we do have the timer running within this 10 seconds. So there's this click, click, click. And that method is called for, of course, here. And we do have another methods that we are calling for. So this is a get key from server. And there is some method that is called decrypt assembly, which is kind of easy because we are passing to this particular method key from server parameter. And then we're going to call for this method within this particular parameter. Very good. So let's have a look. And then I know I don't want to lose you, so we are almost over. This key from server is actually launching and taking, maybe I could summarize it like that, it's taking that server URL that we've got from the client ini, and it's downloading some string. That string, as you saw, because I showed you the website, it was a base64. And then it decodes it and saves it as a byte array. So it's some code, some type of code. Okay, let me have a look at the decrypt assembly. Here, we do have one key, so there is this decryption key, probably, and we are calling for this certain method within this key. So there is some key that probably, whenever it's going to appear, something magic is going to happen. Okay, so let's have a look. If we go to this decrypt res, and this basically is the result that is loaded, and probably is going to be some piece of code over here. So if you go to the decrypt res method, you can see over here that we are using some resource that's called problem. We could not get inside to that particular resource. So the logic that is behind that tiny piece of code is that our client is communicating with a server all the time till there's a one key that happens, and that tiny key is going to cause the piece of code to be decrypted and then launched. And here comes the question, what kind of piece of code is this? And there are two approaches, either the Pollack's approach, either the another people's approach. What is the Pollack approach? Yay, let's run it, let's break it, like, yay, that's going to be the Pollack's. But no, we are not like that, of course. What's going to be the second approach is we will need to find out how we are able to dig in and launch that certain piece of code. What is the parameter? What is the condition? And then we will need to trigger it. Well, of course, I can tell you that on the server side, that we can also analyze it in the same way, but there is a tiny logic going on. And on that server side, we are checking for one parameter. That's how this particular malware works. We can do the same ILSpy on the server side and analyze another piece of code, and you will find out over there the condition that if one parameter equals one, then break things. So let me set up the monitoring, and let me find out, we're going to launch this malware, and we're going to find out and catch what is going on within that certain piece of code. That's going to be a quick thing. First of all, what we're going to do, we're going to set up within our tools, so let me go to the tools folder that I've got on the desktop. Here I get protsdump. Protsdump, of course, it's a free tool to be able to analyze dumps. And what we're going to do, we're going to specify, of course, launch this protsdump first and wait for the process termination. And that protsdump is going to create a memory dump of the process when it terminates. And we are talking here about 1492. The reason why we need to do it like that, it's because we need to catch this encrypted problem that we had. So first of all, what we're going to do, so as you see, we've got here run DLL 1492, and we're going to launch the protsdump with the T parameter to wait for the process termination. We're going to create the memory dump, and then over here, we're going to specify the process ID, which is 1492. 1492. And when it's ready, when the process is going to be terminated, we're going to have a dump. So let me go to the server side, and let me launch that particular malware. How to launch the malware, you can also dig in into a code and verify that there is some file that is loaded that the malware depends on. So I'm going to go to the C drive, and within the trigger, I'm going to edit it, and as you see, there is a zero, and I'm going to change it to one, and in a moment, you're going to see that there is a dump being created. So I'm going to change it to one, file, save, and here we've got a dump created because the malware terminated, malware executed. The story is that, and this is actually a pretty interesting story that we've encountered. There is one tiny control server that is working, and there is a bunch of workstations that we've got. If one thing happens on this control server, things are going on the other workstation. And the tiny story is, in one of the companies, there was a pretty similar case of a malware. Administrator came at work, and he noticed that a lot of computers, they actually blue-screened in the morning. So the situation is somewhat simple. Let me show you. Within the hour, I got here, tiny machine. I got a note that I'm going to start up. Okay, very good. And what happened is that particular machines blue screened, and some of the machines were not blue screened. So the question was, of course, what particular case happened? And let me show you the behavior that certain administrator saw. So there was a machine, and the user, of course, rebooted the certain machine. So restart, bam, okay, no problem, bunk. And in the morning, everyone came at work. This is not true, this is not the window. And the view that everybody sees is this. And imagine this seeing on 1,000 of your computers. I mean, it's a tiny problem. So this analysis, what I'm doing right now, is that small analysis of the code that is launched on one of the sites to verify, technically, what is the reason for that blue screen. So what we can do right now, you see we've got a small dump. That dump is created within the tools folder. So let me dig in. And let's go to the tools folder. And we got it over here. And now there's a pretty interesting thing that we need to do. We need to run the debugger. Unfortunately, WinDBG, it's a debugging tools for Windows. And you can, of course, download it for free from the Windows drivers kit. And this is, I mean, either you love it or you hate it, like Marmite. If you know Marmite, exactly. So debugger is like a Marmite, a little bit. Marmite, if you don't know, just don't buy it. I mean, I'm the one that hates it. It's a fermented yeast from the brewing process. How people can eat it? It's crazy. They put it on the bread and they like eat it with cheese and like every wing. It's just, I mean, why not put it on your face, for example? Just if you love it. Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to first of all load a bunch of things within the debugger. First of all, we're going to load the DLR that's going to do the servicing for the .NET code. And for that, we're going to do the load by. And then we're going to specify SOS, CLR. And then it should be loading, perfect. Then we're going to, within this, because it's a dump of the malware, of run DLL, then we're going to do the dump domain to see what kind of modules we've got loaded within the certain application. So dump domain. Very good. And here, see, you got a problem. Because this is what was launched at the moment when we put this one thing on the server. The malware executed. This was a trigger, which means if something is encrypted when it runs, it's going to be where? In the memory. That's why we made a dump. Okay, guys, hope you're with me. Here, this is a 32-bit address within the memory. I'm going to copy it. Of course, we can check out what is within certain problem resource. But as long as, of course, we got it, what we can do, we can save the module, and then we can put this address over here, and then we can save this certain module to, let's say, analysis and problem DLL, whatever the name you specify. And then we've got this module saved. Very good. Now it's time to go to IllSpy one more time. So I'm going to hide all the stuff because we don't need it. Ah, sorry, just back. Okay, good. Open up. And I'm going to load the problem. Here we go. And this is the decrypted resource of the malware that will tell you exactly what is happening. That's a positive name. With a certain machine. Like, probably there is like nothing bad going on. Oh, kill station. Okay, good. And here, this is the one that was not visible. We just catch that. And what is going on is this certain malware, it's using a very known feature. It's called pending file rename operations. It's a registry key that allows you actually to help out fight with malware. And whenever you rename the operating system file that you can rename at the booting phase, which normally you cannot, the blue screen is going to happen. Tiny trace. You want to smoke a cigarette? So this is a tiny analysis. OK, guys. Interesting for now? Yay. Good. Guys in the back, are you there? Yes. OK, thanks. OK, that's good. I'm just controlling, yeah? OK, so just to summarize, what was the situation? We had a tiny scenario with a client and server. And within this scenario, we triggered the malware that was going on, running on the server, to cause something to the client. And we established the monitoring at the beginning so that we are able to catch this moment. We used the WinDPG, we used XPerf, we used IllSpy to analyze the whole story. Of course, Notepad is also sometimes useful because you can find some information also in Notepad. We use Process Hacker, you can use Process Explorer. So there's a bunch of tools engaged into the whole process. Okay, the next thing is to discuss the system mechanisms. But first, before we jump to the subject, I got a tiny, tiny thing. I promise that there's going to be no commercials, but now it's time for the commercial that is called How to Guard Your Yard. Just relax and enjoy. Yes? CSI Windows. Okay, so here we go.
We all love our home gardens and yards, but as every homeowner knows, nature's wild critters can be highly destructive. Deer forage your foliage. Raccoons ravage your garbage. They can be an annoyance or cost you thousands of dollars in repairs. Messy, dangerous chemicals pose unacceptable risks, and killing them won't keep new pests away. Sealing out the entire area would be impractical and inconvenient. Instead, YardGuard rids your property of problem pests once and for all. It's a silent, maintenance-free option.
Thank you. Now it's time to back to that. Part number two. You're probably wondering why I'm showing raccoons. Well, I like these creatures a lot. They can be very nasty. Normally, whenever the raccoon bites you, you're probably afraid of tiny rabies or something going on within a similar case. But what I would like to show you, it's the tiny scenario. And that tiny scenario can be more or less described like that. Just to remind you, and again, please don't treat it as an obvious comment, because it's not. Whenever you're going to do any kind of investigation, if you're going to use some traces, some methods to dig in into what is happening within the operating system, if you will, for example, jump into prefetch, if you will jump to registry, if you will check out the NTFS journal and that kind of cases, if hacker knows what's your investigation steps, he's going to, of course, cheat on you. And if somebody owns the system, as you, whenever you are administrator, you will do your analysis. If the hacker is administrator, he will do his own analysis as well. You can delete NTFS journal. Within NTFS journal, you've got a history of what is going on with a certain files. So what I would like to show you is the tiny tool that we've been doing a research for the last 6 months, and it's actually not easy to do it. This is a tiny tool to show you that, not to threaten you, don't get me wrong, not to threaten you, just to show you that things can be cheated on as long as you own a certain operating system. And that tiny tool, I call the demo num 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 num. Because this tiny tool is actually related to raccoons. Let me bring it. First of all, I'm going to open up the Event Viewer. And you've probably seen many times, let me go to the full screen, maybe, bunk, Event Viewer. We've got the Windows logs, application log. We can open it up. We can sort out by the date and time. So today we've got 13, okay, let's put it on the top. So these are the fresh events that we've got, very good. And there is something going on at 7 a.m., at 10 a.m., and so on. So there are a couple of ways how we can cheat on that. And one of the ways that actually we found out within the project that this evil administrator was using not to be logged is that he was booting up his client machine from the USB stick. And then there is this loophole within the logs. Things are not logs. He's doing his evil. He takes the USB stick out, then he reboots, he's fine. Yes? What we can do? We can save the event log out, do our evil, put the log back in, and override all the stuff that we did. We tend to say that you cannot cheat on the event viewer. And don't get me wrong, normally you cannot. What I'm going to show you, it's, as I said, 6 months of research, which means it's a lot of work till someone, of course, does that, but things are possible. And there is a tiny tool that I've got. Of course, don't run the tool with the raccoon's icon. It's a, like, you know. And that tiny raccoon, very cute one. It can bite you, but my raccoon doesn't really give you any kind of rabies. It rather removes them. So, what we can specify over here, as you see, I've got a log. And here, I can specify that today, we will delete the logs, certain entries that we don't want them to appear over there, within a certain time. So let's say, let's remove the logs from 7 a.m., so it's gonna be 7, or it can be, yeah, it could be 7 a.m., 2, could be 10, or 7 or 8, whatever. I'm gonna specify it like that, so 7 and 8. Because we do have here, if you have a look, we've got, oh, 7, 7, 10, 7, okay, so this is my time that I've got right now on my machine. So 7 to 8, so anything from coming on 7 will be not there. And then from the application log, of course. So let's byte. And then, if I refresh the event log, bunk, you can see that there are no longer logs from that time. It's only 6. I don't want this, I don't want that, I don't want this. So what my point over here is that, and again, if someone owns your laptop, if someone owns your computer, and if you are doing any kind of research, one person can be always one step farther. That's why gathering information pre-situation, it's so important. What's the solution for that? Very easy. Something that is very easy to be configured. Centralize, guys, your logs, please. Centralize your logs. These logs can be streamed to another server. You can subscribe to that logs. If someone does something, you are on a safe page. Of course, as long as person does not jump into that server over there. But this is something that we really learned after that tiny project that I'm describing. Centralize your logs, because otherwise, if something happens, you will be never able to trace it back. MTFS journal can be deleted. Registry can be changed. Prefetch can be deleted. This is, as I said, one of the cheap tips and tricks thing to do it. Like, delete your prefetch. No, don't do it. Just keep it, maintain it. This is the history, what kind of stuff is running within the operating system. And having this in mind, there is, of course, a couple of conclusions that are coming to the fields. And it's time for a small summary. Whenever you are doing the investigation, keep things safe. Make sure that your work that you are doing is clean. Sometimes a piece of code can react to another piece of code. You do something, then things blow up, and you will never see your laptop again. Within the case that I was describing, when you restart your computer, it's done. Of course, you can search for it, what happened, and so on. But let's say 1,000 people knocking to IT pros' doors. I mean, it's a dream for developers. So keep your workstation safe. Whenever you are analyzing, make sure that you, if, of course, it's a pretty important case, contact the legal case. I'm not disadvising that. Actually, I'm advising that. Contact legal people to do it for you. And if you don't feel it's important, then you can, of course, have fun. Yes? But these things can be only serious if we are treating seriously the incident response procedures. Because if you don't have such a tiny document, guys, it's just a one document, and people trained. If you don't have such a document in place, when there's going to be fire, everyone's going to be like, because it's a stressful moment. I mean, people in this factory that I'm describing, they were really stressed, like adrenaline, you could see it on their faces. They're like, we are losing money, help us. And they don't know what to do, so they reinstalled everything not to lose the money. I mean, logical, yes? But where's the trace? No trace left. So just a tiny, and this is my like a personal goal, coming out of this session, whenever you're gonna do the investigation, keep it clean, try to analyze it in the separate environment, and definitely make sure that all of your reactions are nicely planned. Make sense? Thanks so much, guys, for coming, 8:30. Of course, if you do have any kind of questions, I'm here available. Please fill up the evaluations and see you tomorrow. Thank you.